Good evening, and welcome to the Los Angeles Theatre of the Year. Tonight's broadcast is a play on history, The Condor, by Corrado Costa. The players are Patrick Tovat and Bill Hunt. Now let us join the audience live in KPFK Studio Z.
I'd like to be in front of a little fire, with a kettle over it, if you had one. And then you tell me what there is to eat.
You want to know what there is to eat? You want to know the things you're eating, or you just want to know what you'd like to eat?
Maybe some light thing. Meat that flies.
Do you care for an edible of medium size, robust, fairly swift, of a generally leaden color, the color of rain, with a curved beak, domesticated?
What is this, a riddle?
I've just begun the list of definitions of meats that fly, items of luxury, things of a certain importance that are served here.
Wouldn't it be easier to give me their titles?
I'm not talking about literature. I'm talking about cuisine. Cuisine. If we're to sit around a kettle, we must use words which are strictly culinary, without the least uncertainty or fluctuation of sense. Without absolute certainty, we can't keep the pot boiling. I'll give you all the definitions of the cooked objects. You give me the specifics. You have to give me the names. Anyway, you're the one who asked what there is to eat.
As I figure it, first you described a pigeon. Yes? Was it a pigeon? What else do you have?
Next, there are edibles of medium size, something a little bigger. Actually, it doesn't fly, but only leaps. The fur varies in color, the tail is short, the ears are long. Its hind legs propel its leap. Then there's a flying edible, which is again a little bigger, still rather thick-set. The extremities webbed short, it walks in an unstable way, and besides walking, it floats and swims. Its feathers have a green reflection, dark, metallic.
Well, first you described a rabbit, then a duck. You meant a duck, didn't you? Huh? Webbed extremities? Short? Duck.
I didn't say a duck.
Listen, wasn't it washed in vinegar before cooking, huh? Wasn't it so scalded in water?
Lightly, very lightly, and then it was pickled.
Doesn't it have, at the tip of the aforementioned rump, a yellow and greasy unguent which has been sliced off?
The neck and the head were cut off, too.
Well, were there thin slices of oranges? Yes? Yes, and it is. It's a duck in orange sauce.
Say it! Say it! Try an even bigger name. Because in that green reflection, dark, metallic, which I described before, there is a slash. A narrow white slit of a certain length ending in a wide, ruddy patch.
Is it in a broth? With red cabbage around it, eh? With lentils? Yes. Yes? It's a mallard. Is it a royal mallard?
Tell me. Tell me more. Go ahead, give me a much bigger name. There are some tender edibles with bright colors and yellow feet, with sharp, pointed claws.
Geese?
Say it! Give me an even bigger name. Go ahead, you're on the right track. But be careful. Be very careful. There are even whiter edibles. Extremely white, rarely black. They have long, supple necks. They have a large beak, yellow on top and black underneath, with a black protuberance at the base of the beak. Or there are edibles in every way dazzling, intricately crowned. The male edibles have a splendid train, which they raise like a fan.
Yes, do they have a splendid and shining train?
Yes.
Silky?
Yes.
Made of feathers?
Yes.
Of multicolored feathers, all bursting with color in fantastic, circular, concentric patterns?
Yes.
Do
yes.
they fly?
They fly! They fly! But there's even a much bigger one, which doesn't fly, but runs faster than all the rest. An edible that hardly touches the ground as it runs, covered with sparse, extremely precious plumage. It stands out from quite a distance on a sand...
Enough! Enough. What kind of a game is this? How can I hit the name when you keep stretching the target? Each definition is devoured by a larger definition. There's no meaning without an even larger meaning. Meanings keep devouring each other. Now, what do you want to do? You want me to eat all the meat there is? You want me to go all the way to the mammoth? I don't want a mammoth with spring peas. I want a small edible.
Medium size?
Medium.
In the field of medium-sized edibles, there are certain specialties. A so-called superior subspecies of edibles of the feminine type.
With breasts?
Yes.
A flexible tongue?
Yes.
Extraordinary psychic powers?
Yes, yes. And under the oviparous subspecies, covered with feathers, with pulmonary respiration and warm blood.
Does it fly?
It flies.
Does it eat human livers?
Yes.
Is it found on Mycenaean columns?
Yes, yes, yes.
Five letters.
Yes.
A cross.
Yes.
It begins with H?
Yes.
Harpy.
Ah!
Harpy?
Yes!
I don't want to eat a harpy! I want an edible with similar habits, which feeds on human corpses lost in the desert.
Does it have a head and a neck without feathers?
Yes.
Does it have a white ring around its neck and all the rest black?
Yes, yes.
Do the wings vary from 9 to 18 feet?
Yes, yes, yes. So?
I don't remember what it's called.
Condor is what it's called. A condor. I want to eat a condor.
It's called a condor.
Yes.
All right. Our specialty tonight is condor.
Where did you find it?
An incredible idiot had it. One with a red, green, white, and yellow hat with a red cane in his hand and a stick tied to a blue cane. His yellow tights were slipping down off his ass. One whose ass is showing with a stupid little dog that's always biting his leg.
At the bottom, was there a letter shaped like this? A sort of a W in Hebrew?
Yes.
The shin. The tooth. Was he laughing?
Like a moron.
It's him! Where did you see him?
I saw him in a dream.
It's him. Ah, that incredible idiot who made you dream of him so that you could tell me. What did he say?
Nothing. He didn't say anything. He only wanted to make a gift of his condor.
Where was he coming from?
Nowhere in particular. He looked like somebody who doesn't know where he's coming from or where he's going. Anyway, there were no houses. There were no trees. There was no grass. Everything was burned.
And doesn't it bother you? Someone who comes from a kingdom which no longer exists and wants to give you a gift? Doesn't it scare you?
Tell me. Go ahead. Tell me more.
Doesn't it terrify you? Understand what I'm saying. The messenger of the terror of your dreams who dreamed you and was promised to you, huh?
I don't make the literature of terror. I'm talking about cuisine. About cuisine. So, you want to eat a wild condor?
But I want to eat a domestic condor.
I don't think there are any.
What are you saying?
I'm saying there is none. There is none. We aren't here. It's over. We're finished. All finished. We're closing. We're closing. Good night. Good night. We keep getting ready for the end.
And instead, I'm telling you that to find a condor, you have to go to the same place everybody else goes.
And where does everybody go?
Don't you know where they go? Try to imagine it.
I don't know. To one of those shops over there across the street?
Oh, say something bigger.
To a large industrialized breeding farm, if there are any.
Of course there are. They've built some very large ones for me. For my personal liberty, you understand?
No.
For my individual happiness, you understand?
No.
Well, for my personal safety, do you understand?
No!
I'd like to say, to make things very clear, that it's me who wants to eat the condor in question. That solitary condor hovering above our heads. He's not the one who wants to be eaten. Do you think he wants to be eaten by me?
And why shouldn't I believe it?
You shouldn't believe it, even if that stupid messenger of your dreams tells you. Now, if he tries to tell you that... Listen, let me explain.
And why shouldn't I believe
it? Let me explain. Do we agree that the condor doesn't hover up there patiently waiting to be eaten? That he doesn't magically appear in the sky to fulfill the consumer's wishes? I mean, would you believe it if I told you that the pyramids appeared overnight to satisfy the magical desires of the slaves?
No, no, for Christ's sake. Magic? Magic! It was the slaves themselves that built them.
So you don't believe it?
No, I don't believe it. Tell me. Go ahead. Tell me something even bigger. I won't believe even that.
Yeah, not even if I say God?
Go ahead. Give me something even bigger.
A dual God.
Say it. Say it.
A triple God. Don't you believe even that?
Uh-uh.
Well, so I don't believe in your miraculous condor, Father, Son, and Condor who's in the heavens above. I want to eat a real condor, not a metaphysical condor somewhere up there. I want a domestically bred condor.
From what breeding farm? A cooperative one?
No, name it. Name something even bigger.
From a consortium.
No, say it. Say something even bigger.
A multinational?
Ah, so now you believe
ah.
it. A multinational of the condor and his brothers? A multinational that controls all condor breeders. It has incubators everywhere in Europe and Asia. Incubators for males and incubators for females. All of this getting sorted out in Japan into masculine condor eggs and feminine condor eggs. These condors are then raised by us on cereal and fish meal mixed with worm meal.
Which meal is best?
Oh, the ones from underdeveloped countries.
Ah.
The best condor is a condor from an underdeveloped egg, bred in an underdeveloped country until it reaches 2 pounds and then is fattened by us.
But how is anybody supposed to know all this? I'm not talking about committed literature. I'm talking about cuisine. Cuisine.
Oh, someone who discusses eating has to do a little research. I've done it.
In the field of condors?
No, I did my research in the field of a luxurious product with thick fur. Soft and shiny, dark brown in the upper body, and brown with whitish spots in the lower.
You mean mink? Yes, you said mink.
Known also by the name of mink. I was wearing more than 40 of these pelts. Now, where do you think they came from?
You killed them all in the mountains.
No, name it. Name something bigger.
You exterminated a breeding farm.
No, go ahead. Tell me something even bigger.
You leveled an entire national park.
How can you help not knowing it? Well, that same idiot gave them to you when he went bankrupt. The one wearing a red, green, white, and yellow hat with a red cane in his hand and a whole bundle of sticks tied to another blue cane.
Were his yellow tights slipping down off his ass? Was his ass bare?
Mm-hmm.
It's him. It's him. But where did you meet him?
I met him in my dreams.
It's him. It's always him. He made you dream of him so that he could bring me a gift. Thank him for the mink. What did he want you to tell me?
Zero. Zip. Nada. Zilch. Nothing. Nothing. He said nothing.
And where was he coming from?
Oh, from zero direction. Zero. Nowhere. Anyway, there wasn't any direction. There were no houses, there were no trees, there was no grass, everything was burned.
Doesn't it scare you when someone arrives from a kingdom that doesn't exist with a gift for you?
No.
Say it. Name something even bigger.
No. No.
So you're finally finished with this story of yours? Finished with the mink? Is the book closed on this discussion of furs? Yes? All right, then. If you're hungry...
I'm not hungry. I just want to arrange a certain matter.
So if you're not hungry, there's nothing to eat. There's nothing anymore. We're closing. We're closing. Good night. Good night.
Developing the end.
No, no, it's open. It's open, don't you hear?
What am I supposed to hear?
Don't you hear? It's open. They're shouting that it's open.
Well, how am I supposed to hear that it's open?
It's open according to law.
According to what law?
According to the law of economic development. Don't you hear? The condors in all the breeding farms are shouting that I am hungry. That I am hungry. That I need them to be eaten by me. This desert is an area undergoing great economic development. There are no houses, there are no trees, isn't any grass. Everything was burned, and this is important economically from the condor perspective.
So why is there only one of them here? What happened?
Don't you know what happened to the condors?
There was a plague.
Say it. Say something even bigger.
We're exterminating the species by our use of pesticides. Too many pesticides.
No. No. There's a condor crisis. The price of condor is falling.
Is it possible for you to tell me what kind of business you have in mind?
You want to discuss that condor?
Why? Do you want it for half price?
No, tell me if you want to talk about it, yes or no.
No. Because of the crisis, it's better to hold on to the condor. The more the price of condor falls, the harder they are to find.
But I'll pay double.
But don't you know in this crisis, condor eggs will be thrown away? The condor will be destroyed in the egg. They'll make it extinct.
Listen, don't you know that the fewer condors there are, the more severe my needs will get? I'm crying out with need. All the breeders know it. They know who I am. They hear my cries.
And according to you, you're known by the Condor Multinational?
All the condor breeding trusts know me precisely because they know my needs.
And who says so?
Go ahead, you tell me.
Your father?
Oh, say it. Say something bigger.
Your mother?
Say it. Name something even bigger. The economy says it. It tells me that the condor breeders know me even better than my mother and father because they know my most hidden, shameful needs. They know who I am better than I do. For this reason, precisely for this, they breed their horrible condors.
And you? So then, who are you?
I'm the son of a poor idiot who goes around with a red, green, white, and yellow hat.
Where does he stay?
In my dreams. He comes and goes often with his red cane and his blue cane.
And what does he do?
It's a secret. You can't tell this to anybody. I beg you.
All right.
My father is a great actor. On a great stage, illuminated by sunlight.
Ah. Is he a well-known actor?
He's well-known for his deafness. At this moment, he's reciting. He recites without knowing at all what the others are saying, what they're answering him. He goes his own way.
And you?
And me. What do you want to know? When my father understood that I absolutely needed him, well, my father gave 3 jabs of his prick when he understood I absolutely needed him. This was his highest purpose.
And where were you born?
I was born in a theater like this one. I was born on the other half, on the stage illuminated by daylight. I was born in front of a great crowd that applauded my father with great applause, which my father, among other things, can't hear.
What kind of roles does your father play?
He has a part in the Thyestes by Seneca. And in playing the role of Thyestes, you might say he even plays me.
Why you? What's your name?
It's not that I don't want to tell you. It's just that I don't want to be misunderstood. My name
is Tantalus.
And who's Tantalus?
Tantalus is the son of Thyestes.
Ah, and what does he do?
What does he do? What does he do?
He does what everybody else does. What is this, an interrogation? You want to see my ID card? Who the hell are you?
I'm like you. The son of an idiot.
Why, does your father, too, go around like that one with a red and green...
white and yellow hat.
Is he an actor, too?
Yes. He's an actor on an enormous stage illuminated by daylight.
What kind of roles does he play?
He has a role in the Thyestes by Seneca.
And where were you born?
I was born on the other half, on the great illuminated stage among public applause.
How did you end up here on a stage without trees, without grass, without clouds, completely burned out?
I was left with no part.
What is your part?
That of Plisthenes.
Who's this Plisthenes?
Your mute brother. The one who never utters a word, does absolutely nothing. Now, consult the cards to find out what's going to happen.
And if you turn over the Joker?
If that moron turns up with a multicolored hat and the pants hanging down off his ass, I interpret that as adding up to zero.
Oh, how do you interpret the condor?
Ah, the condor's different. It's another thing altogether. What does the condor have to do with the cards?
Anyway, don't worry as far as the condor goes. I'll even take it fresh frozen. Huh? Fresh? Frozen? How do you think we should cook it?
I'd cook your meat in a sauce made from a bulb with fleshy and succulent leaves around it.
What's it called?
I don't know.
Well, try something bigger.
I don't know. You just take your meat, you parboil it. Then you take the stem from a large, fleshy flower, the shape of a yellowish-white ball.
Oh, cauliflower. Cauliflower?
I said I don't know.
Oh, well, go ahead. Say something even bigger.
From the leanest part of your flesh we can make. From subterranean bulbs with red and white flowers. From a taproot capriciously cultivated for its orange color, from white-ribbed leaves of a herbaceous nature. I don't know. From a little piece of, from the fattest part of your flesh.
Hey, will you tell me why we keep talking about my flesh? Aren't we brothers? So then we should talk about our flesh.
Fine, huh? Our flesh then. But we have to know what kind of flesh it is. Male or female?
Oh, try it. Name something even bigger.
Tender humanoid flesh.
Say it! Give me an even bigger name.
Tender androgynous flesh.
Ah, that tender flesh, which is but one flesh.
What?
Like the condor.
Like the condor that for the last hour has been circling above our heads.
Do you know how the condor flies?
No.
The male condor, which, contrary to the female, possesses a noticeably feminine instinct, has only a left wing. The female condor, which is a result of some sexual abnormality, plays the male role, has only a right wing. When they meet, they couple. They entwine their necks and somehow fly.
So it's an act of love. Makes the condor fly.
Go ahead, name something even bigger.
Two condors.
Oh, how beautiful. Oh, I wish it was night.
And I wish it was day.
Oh, think of the joy in the sky when two condors meet in their vernal rotation. One of them half male and half female, the other half female and half male.
Imagine the joy when a condor half feminine and half masculine meets a condor half masculine and half feminine.
Or in their infinite vernal rotation, a half feminine and half feminine condor meets a half feminine and half feminine condor. Or maybe a half masculine and half masculine condor with a half masculine and half masculine condor.
The sky is always full of adventure. But in this barren place, something vernal will never happen.
For instance?
For instance, if you and I had only one leg each, and to walk we'd have to do like the condors.
Yes, my brother, I'm thinking of making love to you, of creating a little springtime around here, and then moving on once my wounds have healed.
So you really aren't a hunter?
No, I'm not a hunter.
Then you don't know that a condor patiently follows the trail of the man, of a wounded man. It follows him patiently, flying around in concentric circles. The true hunter, to get a good shot at the condor, aggravates his wounds. And if you were a hunter, you'd know that during the hunt you have to open horrible new wounds. Wounded meat seized with spasmic contortions, with pain, becomes always more tender. But listen. Would you shoot your condor quickly with one shot to the head?
And you?
No.
So you think that the big stockholders in the breeding farms break the arms, snap the wings, crush the beaks and legs of the domestic condors before killing them?
I don't know. I'm not here to protest against the treatment of condors. I just want to talk about cuisine. Anyway, just for comparison, how would you like one just like yourself?
Oh, go ahead. Try something even bigger.
Two like you? Is three all right? Uh-huh. And one put aside for Christmas. 3 days before, the arms and legs must be broken, after which he should be immersed up to his chin in a river, where he's left until he's ready for slaughter. This way the meat turns out very tender.
But then you're telling me that to be good, the meat must still look alive.
Even more, even more. It must still be alive.
According to you, as soon as the condor lands, I ought to eat him alive?
Maybe.
And then according to you, the contrary is also true? Shouldn't the condor land when I'm still alive?
Maybe. Maybe. Do you know what it means for a living being to be devoured by another living being?
What?
One living being nourishes with his own life another living being that sucks on him, tears him apart slowly with little teeth from inside.
Oh, it's impossible.
One living being nourishes with his own life another living being that sucks on him, tears him apart slowly with little teeth from inside.
I tell you, it's impossible.
There are certain insects.
What? Certain insects? Well, of course there are certain insects. Well, you're very quick to say that there are certain insects, minute little turds. Who believes in insects? If insects behave this way, nobody sees them. We see nothing of this. These are your opinions, and of those who exploit insects. Proletariat knows nothing about insects. Oh, so you'll have to talk about something bigger.
All right, then. The body politic.
So, what's this body politic?
Isn't the body politic big enough for you? Isn't the body politic easy enough for you to see? You agree with me, don't you, on the visibility of the body politic?
No.
Or the fact that the body politic is an invisible organism which has certain visible needs?
What kind of needs?
For instance, to eat.
What does this body politic eat?
It feeds on minorities, on the disenfranchised, on inferior races. The body politic of minorities feeds on other minorities. The body politic of madmen feeds on other madmen. The body politic of prisoners and the persecuted feeds on other prisoners and persecuted. Each in turn, the organisms, the functionaries of the body politic, feed on the body politic and devour it. Whoever is inside has his meal all around him, just as the hymenopteran parasites do.
What the hell do the hymenopteran parasites do?
Ah, the female of the hymenopteran parasite, whether stinging or terebrant, catches a larva or an adult insect, the so-called meal, and strikes it with its stinger. It lays eggs in this meal, in a meal which will become its own cook.
defenseless. It lives like an immobile cook become cuisine.
Why immobile?
Because the stinger injects venom in the ganglia of the central nervous system and leaves the insect in a state of paralysis.
Like the body politic.
Like the body politic. The body can't feed itself anymore, but the parasitic officials continue to feed off it.
Think of it. To be eaten alive. By your own organ. Cell by cell. Molecule by molecule. Without any chance of escape. Without any possibility of defense. Using your own life to support the lives of those who are devouring you.
Tantalus, would you like to go to a restaurant to eat the cook?
Can you imagine it? Can you imagine it? I go to a restaurant where I can eat the cook and the condor arrives to eat me.
What?
You know what I'm thinking about, Pleisthenes? That condor wants to eat the both of us.
That condor makes me laugh. Tell it that it makes me laugh.
What?
You stinking condor. You turn some excuse for a condor. Come down here and I'll fix your scrawny ass. Come on, you stupid bird. Right here. Take off your feathers and act like a man. I'm right. Aren't I, Tantalus?
Well,
aren't I, Tantalus?
You pardon me, brother, but I prefer not to say anything against the condor. You know,
maybe the two of you will get back together and you'd remember all the lousy names I called him.
We'll never get back together. The condor makes me laugh. It's an hour he's been following us and he doesn't know we've already been devoured. There's nothing left to eat. There's nothing left. It's finished. It's over. Well, we're closing. Good night. Good night.
This is not yet the end.
Now, let me get this straight. I go to the restaurant. The condor goes to the restaurant to eat me and discovers that I've already been eaten?
Yes. We're here not to be eaten, but as that which has already been eaten.
Well, all right, so then why are we talking about lighting a little fire and putting a kettle over it, if you had one, and wondering what there is to eat? It's the same old pile of crap. This isn't cuisine. This is not cuisine.
Why are you saying it isn't cuisine?
Oh, you don't even know how to fry an egg. You're only good at the literature of the memory of cuisine. The literature of a cuisine which has been eaten by its own subject.
No, we're really concerned with cuisine.
God.
We're the dish. We're the dish which has already been consumed. Our father is on a beautiful stage, sitting down to eat. He stays seated at the table in the sunlight. Tormenting himself.
Oh, why does he torment himself? What's bothering him?
Because we're inside him. Because he's eaten us.
You know? I understand why the tights are falling off his ass.
Mm-hmm.
Because... Do you understand what he wants to do? Do you really understand, Pleisthenes? He cries, eats, and he's already set... Oh, what a goddamn turd!
What?
Here, come here! I'll fix your scrawny ass. Yeah, you make me laugh. Why did you try to scare me? He's not here.
He's here inside of us.
Oh, and where are we?
We're over there, inside of him.
Hmm. So at this point, who the hell are we?
We're that which has been devoured. But in time, that which has been devoured is able to devour that which devours it. Listen. On one side or the other, above or below, around us, high above where the condor flies, the teeth are clicking all the time. But it means nothing anymore. In the middle, we're clicking our teeth. And outside, do you know what that technicolor idiot of a father is doing? He rubs his belly and groans.
Whose grounds are these? My breast groans with a groan that is not mine.
Who's groaning?
It's us who groan, according to him.
Well, so it makes me feel like laughing. I feel like laughing, nothing else.
Anyway, whether you like it or not, he can play his meal as he wants. He's eaten us, and he cries. It's the same story. The father has devoured his sons, and Seneca makes him cry out with anguish. God damn it! Make your sons shout that they were the ones who were eaten.
What?
This Seneca makes me laugh. He writes a tragedy from the point of view of him who devours.
What?
He invents a restaurant where the cook and the waiter have already been eaten. Let me laugh in peace. I'm right. Aren't I?
Well, I'd rather say nothing, brother. You know, if you and the Seneca and get back to you.
What can I bring you?
Well, what comes on the dinner in this intimate restaurant?
On the dinner, we have an edible of medium size which has caught fire, with charred wings, with a pale, frigid frying face that cries, eat me, I'm scalding hot.
And what does the customer say?
The customer, who already has a hot meal devouring him from within, he cries out, where are you going? Where are you going? Are you escaping from my mouth? I'm trying like crazy to bite, to sink my teeth in things that just disappear. How's that sound to you?
And after this enormous meal, our father goes to the toilet.
Well, I think that's the best way to interpret Seneca's text. From within my stomach, a generation continuously appears, capable of replacing me.
But me, who's been eaten, how did I get here?
You happen to be the essence of having been devoured, without the essence of having slipped out.
How?
Like a turd.
Oh, so then we're continuously being ingested by the proprietor of the digestive tract, eh? First as sons, then as a meal, and finally as a text?
Stop sounding like that. Will you learn from our father, Tantalus? Listen to him. Work, work. Take the breast. Wash the insides. Wash the neck. Throw it in a pan, bone it, piece it, cut off the extremities. Not too much salt, don't add too much pepper, 2 spoons of oil. Go ahead and let the blood flow on the fire.
This is a simple text. It's decorous, clean. They're doing a performance where everything's clear and makes sense. It's the way it should be.
How?
Smooth, with some sacrifice.
Sacrifice? Sacrifice? Don't you understand what sacrifice you're talking about? Ours! Nobody else's but ours! Our father ate us!
But why did he eat me if it's me who's hungry?
You were eaten because the best son is the son who we sacrifice. And the son who is best sacrificed is the son who is eaten. Our father ate us and is now expressing our suffering with his tears.
Well, this makes me feel happier. I have a great hunger. I really understand the condor.
To look at it another way, we're both here to satisfy hunger. But whose?
Of our paternal needs.
Even those of psychiatry.
Even those of imprisonment.
Even those of chaos.
Even those of annihilation, of the void.
It's true. But what void are you talking about, if there's nothing? Because there is nothing. We're not here. It's over. We're closing. Good night. Good night.
This is really the...
Our story has no other truth than in having to repeat the same story. You want me to go over the whole thing in a minute? It's easy. Tantalus kills and eats, along with the gods, his son Pelope. They thank him and bring Pelope back to life. Pelope has two sons, Atreus and Thyestes, our father. Our father, Thyestes, eats the two of us. Agamemnon, the son of Atreus, kills his daughter Iphigenia. Now, what do we want who were eaten?
To screw their wives, enjoy their houses, and adorn ourselves with their jewels.
Tell me something even smaller.
To take their lives, to suck their blood and absorb the marrow.
Go ahead, try something even smaller.
To get half the kingdom?
Good, half the kingdom. And so what did that generation do with their power?
It devoured the following generation.
And what does the following generation have to do not to be devoured?
It has to kill the generation that controls the power. If you don't kill your father, you'll be devoured.
That's it.
But what has Marx to do with all this?
Marx? Look, say something even bigger.
So what did Freud have to do with all this?
Who's talking about Freud?
We could try to find a cure, couldn't we?
You know what? The only cure is that we each devour our own selves. Next time, I'm going to be the only one who eats me.
But what will they say? They'll think that if we eat ourselves, we're doing them a favor.
For more than 2 hours, our father has been debating himself. He talks without saying a word. He says that the world will be overturned by one disaster after another, that the uncertain future of democracy will vacillate between unstable kings, and that things will remain essentially the same. That these same rulers, after being overthrown for the same crimes, come back again and again to commit more crimes as horrible as themselves.
Beautiful. Fantastic. Why don't you put on a red, green, white, and yellow hat and carry a red cane and a blue cane in your hand?
With tights that slip down off my ass? What have you got in your head, Tantalus? Besides your life, do you want to give him your death, too? Remember, you've already been eaten, and you're falling toward the brink of the digestive tract. You're near the nether regions of the theatrical body. You've already slipped out the ass of the spectacle that's being performed over there. You're that which has been totally devoured. Over there's the theater that devoured you, representing those who knew everything ahead of time.
So why are they still acting?
They keep reciting their parts to make us forget ours.
But theater... is it a medium for remembering?
Over there are the things that are remembered. Over here, that which is forgotten.
Will we be forgotten?
We're here because we've already been forgotten.
But what is this place, huh?
Seneca says it's a place just like any other. He writes, "This is the same as that. That is the same as this. There are no houses. There are no trees. There isn't a blade of grass. Everything has been burned, and besides, there's nothing to see."
There isn't even a theater?
Make believe. There's a hall with carved beams and columns. A hall open to the public. Behind, like a piece of scenery, there's a palace. And behind the palace, a forest. Behind this palace and this forest, there's a theater. We hear some voices. We're afraid to look. On the other side, we see nothing.
I understand. Let me give you an example. Imagine
A fire.
I imagine a fire.
Good. No one lights this fire. Now imagine you hear screams.
I imagine hearing the screams.
Good. Nobody's screaming.
Good. And you. Imagine something even bigger. Imagine seeing a man with his hands tied behind his back. And another man who's sharpening a knife. All right? Now we see nothing.
You had a knife in your hand!
I didn't have a knife. I didn't say a knife. I said nothing. On the other hand, I saw nothing. I have other things to watch.
Oh, me too. I've got other things to watch.
Yeah.
I'm actually watching a man tying the hands of another behind his back. Ties a cloth over his eyes and shoots him.
What color is the sky?
Beautiful color. Metallic black and blue.
As I see it, the condor's watching us and we can't see him.
On the left side of the heavens, a dark star has fallen.
It left a long, dark trail.
Are you talking about a crime?
I'm not talking about a crime.
Well, go ahead. Say something even bigger.
A bloodbath?
Say it. Try something even bigger.
A sacrifice. A necessary sacrifice.
Oh, was it really necessary?
I don't know if it was necessary. If it wasn't, it's even more legitimate.
So what happened?
Just a simple elimination in front of people who are used to not noticing such things.
Of not noticing what?
Not noticing those who were eliminated. This is the kind of theater I like. I'd be more than willing to perform in a theater where the actors are devoured in front of an audience used to noticing nothing.
So what kind of a theater do you want if there are no crimes?
But if there are corpses...
There are no corpses!
But if there's a condor...
There's no condor to be seen anywhere! There are no trees. There are no houses. There isn't a blade of grass. There's not even a desert. There's nothing. It's over. We're closing. Good night.
You have been listening to the Los Angeles Theatre of the Year's production of The Condor, live from KPFK's Studio Z. The players were Patrick Tovat and Bill Hunt. The Condor was translated, adapted for radio and directed by Paul Vangelisti. Technical production for tonight's broadcast was by Peter Sudheim. The Los Angeles Theatre of the Year is produced for KPFK Radio, by Patrick Tovat and Paul Vangelisti, with partial support from the National Endowment for the Arts. This is Gillian Fleming, wishing you a good night.